prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, January 25th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we saw higher gold prices today, and we're above 1,100 once again. Aftermarket continues to trade in the New York spot, so we're up $10 for gold at 1109. Silver is up 23 at 1433. Platinum was up 28. Big day for platinum at 862. Palladium went the other direction, down 7 at $492. We have the USDX today, and of course, a little bit of pressure, not too much, 0.28. At 99.25, crude oil's gain on Friday reversed today, down 2.28 at 29.91. The paper markets today saw a big drop, 207 points for the Dow, 15,886. The Nasdaq was down 72 at 45.18. The S&P was down 29 at 1877. 10-year yield, 2.02%. Of course, did a little bit of strength in Euro, 109, up 0.52. Chesapeake Energy took a big drop today, over 13%. That is just unbelievable how much that share has gone down. That company, Chesapeake Energy, 3.04%. Down 13.17, but that's one of the most popular stocks in trading today. And you know what? It's all about Wall Street making their little commissions. You know, hey, they have to trade to make money, and they're good at that. They're good at trading your investments, and that's why they don't want you to own gold. They don't get to trade you. They don't get to make any money. So what a terrible investment gold is. But
for Wall Street.
But you know what? It's all for Wall Street. But yeah, you know what, Al? Look how many people fall into that, into their little guise of we're here to help. Wall Street's as bad as the government. They're here to help. We're here to help you retire. Yeah, they're there to help you retire broke. So if you follow their instructions. European stocks, they had some little bit of downward pressure, mainly due to crude oil prices selling off again. Asian stocks were a little bit firmer overnight. They just followed Wall Street gains from Friday. The Federal Open Market Committee begins their meeting Tuesday and ends Wednesday afternoon with a statement, and no one is expecting any change in the interest rates at this meeting. But as everyone comments, the meeting will be very closely scrutinized. And and of course, as everybody remembers, the FOMC meeting in mid-December gave the markets their first quarter point rise in a very long time.
Speaking of December, the Dow Jones was 17,425 on December 31st. It's currently about 15,900. It's fallen 8.7% in the last 3.5 weeks.
And since we're doing that little bit of comparison, before I go on to my, I just wanted to talk about a couple articles I saw in the news today before we get into the talk about the bear market and the global stocks and all the wealth that's already gone. I just did a quick little comparison today, just from a week ago. It's not a big comparison on $20 gold pieces versus spot price. Since last Monday, we saw gold up $18. Last Monday, it was $1,091. Today, I based it on $1,109. $20 gold pieces in the lower grades are up $35 and $40. So a nice little
pop. You mean above it? Okay.
Yeah, above their prices from last week. They've gained that much in their coin prices versus an $18 move in gold. So a nice little pop in the $20 gold pieces. Mint State 63, $20 Liberties, they had the biggest gain. They were up $45 from a week ago on Monday. And these are based on, you know, when I say $45, that's wholesale costs, $45. So they're not my commissions or anything like that. It's just wholesale costs. So nice pop in the $20 gold pieces. And again, it's just another reminder that you can see these nice gains in these coins. It's a great way to be diversified. They provide you with a little more privacy, a little more pop, and in the price. So if you'd like to diversify, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Prior to the program, Al, I was telling you about, I saw the Supreme Court today, they upheld a 5-year-old federal program that pays large electric customers to save during times of peak demand, not customers to save energy during times of peak demand. So they're paid. Large electric customers are paid to save. Okay?
By the electric company.
By the electric company. So now, this is pushed by Obamacare and all the environmentalists out there. So supporters of the plan say it has saved billions of dollars in energy costs, improved reliability of the power grid, and reduced air pollution since it was put in place in 2011. Well, now the power utilities, the utility companies, they're complaining and saying that they have lost millions of dollars in profits under this rule. They argued it was too generous and trampled state rights over retail electricity sales. So now you have the consumer like you and me who gets taxed because this is a federal program that pays these large electric customers. So we pay that one time. And then who do you think makes up for those millions of dollars that is lost in profits under this rule? It's you and me again. So we get the double whammy in this great environmental federal program that was passed by Obama, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, that's all right. Keep doing it. Keep jamming the people out there. That's just...
Well, that's what they're there for, Melody. Somebody's got to pay for these government programs, and, you know, that's what the people are here for.
But how many, you know what, it just gets me because, you know, people just continue to pay. We just continue to do their little old bidding, and nobody really knows how much they're paying double for the, I mean, it's.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, trying to get straight numbers and the rest of it. It's just evidence of how fragile the system is. Because it won't stand on its own 2 feet without a bunch of lies to support it. and laws that are perhaps contrary to the best interests of the American people. You know, if the country was hitting on all eight cylinders, we wouldn't need all sorts of complicated laws, and people could tell us what the real unemployment rate is and tell us the true size of the national debt, and we wouldn't have to worry about it. But insofar as I or you or anyone in the audience believes the government is lying to us, those lies are evidence that the government and the economy are fragile and on the verge of some sort of a fracture and maybe even a collapse. And they are trying to just maintain public confidence, maintain public confidence. If they'll tell you how important it is that we have public confidence in order to maintain the value of our fiat currency. Well, you know, I just wrote an article for this this last issue of the American Survival. And the article, the argument is simply that we all know we have to have confidence. Virtually everyone listening to this program has heard people in positions of power talk about how you got to have that public confidence. What was the saying in the article is confidence in what? All right, we got to have confidence, but confidence in what? And they never exactly specify what you need confidence in. You got to maintain confidence, but confidence in what? Well, we won't tell you that. What do you have to have confidence in? Given that we have a debt-based monetary system and a debt-based economy, what do we have to have confidence in? And the answer is, we have to have confidence in the idea that the debt can and will be paid. We're running around with little debt instruments in our pockets. We call them dollars, but they're not. They're Federal Reserve notes, and they're debt instruments. And in theory, they have to be made good. Somebody's got to give somebody something material for those green pieces of paper. And as long as we have confidence that the debt, the national debt, the private debt, the corporate debt, all the debts are going to be paid, as long as that's true, we can hold a debt-based monetary system together. As long as we have confidence that the debt instruments will be paid, somebody's going to make good on the national debt, and the people that are holding those treasuries will get their money back. As long as we have confidence that the debt-based monetary system can persist. But if you look at the numbers and you begin to do some study on it and you begin to realize, oh my gosh, the debt is too great to be repaid, that's when you begin to lose confidence in the system. Now, most people haven't done that. They haven't made that study yet, and they haven't done that yet. But the truth is, most of the debt can't be paid, and it won't be paid. And in my judgment, and I could be mistaken, but my judgment, 80 to 90% of the existing debt will not be paid. And if you come to similar conclusions, I don't see how anyone can even begin to argue that 50% will be paid. More than 50%. I think in the 50% won't be paid. I don't think anybody can argue against that. I'm thinking it's at least 80%, probably 90% that can't be paid. What does that mean? It means you got to be crazy, self-destructive, suicidal to hang on to debt instruments in this environment. Sooner or later, if you're going to maintain confidence, which is what?
Which is debt. Based instruments,
yeah. Well,
which is,
you know, the debt-based,
right.
Stocks, bonds, pension funds, bank accounts, all right? Anything that's paper. You got a piece of paper that says somebody owes you some money, you have a debt instrument, all right? You don't have an asset, you have a debt instrument. And sooner or later, we're going to hit the moment where everybody is going to realize, oh my gosh, we can't pay all the debt. Now what? Those who are still holding the debt instruments are going to panic, and they are going to dump their instruments as fast as they can, as fast as humanly possible, and the net result will be the price of those instruments will plummet, and they are going to lose, the first ones are going to lose 10%, and then 20%, 30%, and in my judgment, we're going to go to 80 to 90% losses.
Yep.
And what is the alternative on all... And this will happen. It won't happen until we run out of confidence in the promise that the debt will be paid. We have confidence. The national government says the national debt is $18, $19 trillion. John Williams at shadowstats.com says, no, it's actually about $100 trillion. I don't know who's right, but I don't think the government, I'm with all the lies the government tells, I'm not inclined to believe them. I've seen a report from the Congressional Budget Office and from economist John Kottmeyer, if I'm remembering his name correctly. They both conclude that there's over $200 trillion in national debt, including unfunded liabilities. Can't be paid. That translates into something like $650,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. There's no way it's not going to be paid. But as long as we have confidence in the idea that they can and will pay the debt, then the system can continue to function. But when people look at reality and they say, you know, that's too much money, they can't pay that debt. At that point in time, we lose confidence in the idea that they can pay the debt in the debt-based monetary system and in the debt-based economy. And when we realize they can't pay the debt, at that point, people are going to run, not walk, run for tangible assets like gold and silver. Those who don't get there in time are going to be, or will wish that they did. But in any case, my point is that confidence in what? Confidence in the debt will be paid. That's the confidence that must be maintained. And it can't be supported. I'm unable to see any objective hope or reason to sit back and say, oh, sure. Oh, don't worry about a thing. The debt can be paid. No, it can't.
There was another thing I wanted to bring up before we go to break here is the agreement or the treaty that we now have with Iran. Their president went to Rome. It's the first state visit by an Iranian president to Europe in almost 2 decades. And he's going all around Europe to visit everyone, as it's going to be a 4-day visit to Italy and France. As part of the efforts by Iran to reach out to its old partners following the implementation of this landmark deal, curbing their nuclear activities. Europe was Iran's largest trading partner before the sanctions, and a range of business and trade deals is expected, including with Airbus for the purchase of new aircrafts. And I guess there's going to be a boatload of Airbuses that they're going to be purchasing. So much for Boeing. As far as getting any of the business. And so what exactly did Obama get for the U.S. with making this deal with Iran?
We did get five. Send him $150 billion.
Yeah.
He's a heck of a negotiator. You got to give him. He's very stylish. All right. What he lacks in substance, he makes up for with great style.
But Italy was Iran's second largest trading partner after Germany, with 7 billion euros in trade that dropped after the sanctions. So Europe is looking to rebuild that relationship with them.
But they are. And it's on one level, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Certainly not a bad thing for Europe, because it might be, in theory, it might help to stimulate the European economy. In theory, if they can sell more stuff to Iran, it won't make. I don't know that it's going to save them, but it should be.
Hey,
it should amp them up. They're going to sell more Volkswagens and BMWs and whatever to the Iranians. Well, that should be good for Europe.
Well, they got $1.5 billion. So, yeah, they'll take a share of that. So, anyway, I thought that was interesting. It's just another, part of the picture.
It's in here in the world that we call sane. This is just another illustration that, well, maybe not.
And you know what? We chuckle, Alan. It's not funny. I shake my head.
Humor. Undertaker's humor. It's like, oh, my God. This is just so bizarre.
And
We're exceeding our... It's time for Frank to play the music. He likes to stay involved. That's his job. Frank is our producer. And he likes to play the music. So let's let him do it. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. In the third segment of the program, we'll have a guest, Joe from Arkansas. Joe calls in on the program periodically. Joe's written a book called The Way Forward is Back, and we will be talking to Joe about his book and the ideas he's trying to communicate in the third segment of the program. Right now, Melody, we can get back to whatever it is we're getting back to. What's next?
Oh, you wanted to talk a little bit about the one-fifth of all worldwide stock market wealth is gone. The world is pretty much in a bear market where they've lost 20% from the peak. And
it's an article from Michael Snyder. We've interviewed him on one occasion on this program, the Economic Collapse blog. Michael, very intelligent guy, very prolific guy. This is an article that was written a couple of days ago, but global stocks enter bear market. Bear market is defined by if the stock declines 20% from its last high, then people say, uh-oh, 20% or more, they say, uh-oh, we're in a bear market. And he says, global stocks enter bear market. One-fifth of all worldwide stock market wealth is already gone. All by itself, that's a fascinating one-fifth. 20% is gone globally out of the global stock markets. That's a fascinating headline from my perspective because How do you get wealth to just flat disappear? And it's not a mystery, really, but still it's a little bit odd. You stop to think about it. One-fifth of all global worldwide stock market wealth is already gone. Gone where? Did the Illuminati capture it? Did they steal it? All right, did it go to the central banks? Did it go to Obama? Who's got the, where'd it go? It's gone. It disappeared. And there's something in that that just, it's not extraordinary. You know, you could say the same thing about Cadillacs. You were selling Cadillacs for $50,000, but now we're having a sale and they're going out for $45,000. All right, there's nothing so surprising about that. They're having a little sale, prices down. They've lost 10%. 10% of the value of the Cadillac has disappeared. It's gone. It's not really all that unusual, and yet there's something about one-fifth of all worldwide stock market wealth is already gone. It's gone. It didn't go from investor A to investor B. It has disappeared. And this is the sort of thing. This is another one of these events or headlines. You look at it and say, you know, I'm glad I've got a couple ounces of gold. Because no matter what happens, at least the ounces will still be there. All right, price can go up, price can go down, same thing as the stocks, but in any case, the argument, the article from Michael says it's official. Global stocks have entered a bear market on Wednesday, that would be last week. We learned that the MSCI All Country World Index has fallen a total of more than 20% from the peak of the market. So that means that roughly one-fifth of all the stock market wealth in the entire world has already been wiped out. How much more is it going to take before everyone will finally admit that we are having a major financial crisis on our hands? 30%? 40%? There is a strange thing in all of this.
It'll be 70% out because they never admit to it. Oh, we're just...
Yeah. Uh-huh. Pay no attention. Nothing
to see
here. Keep moving. Just keep moving along. It's all under control. And the world seems to sort of accept that. You know, it's like living in a house made out of sugar cubes while it's raining. Don't worry about a thing. We're just it's fine. It's all under control.
But the world does keep moving.
Yeah, the world does keep moving. They haven't gone into anything like a panic yet. Exactly.
They should.
But you do. Well, I don't know if a panic is justified just yet, but we're certainly getting close to that.
If I had money in there, I'd be panicking, but go ahead.
Well, I understand.
They should be very concerned.
Well, it's not only the investors. If you had money in it, yeah, they'd be concerned. But the guy on the street doesn't have any money in the stock market, probably. Doesn't have any money on the bond market. But if the markets have lost a fifth of the wealth that was presumed to be there, you know, just a few months ago. Fifth of it's gone. That should be cause for concern for ordinary people. Because when that money disappears, some of that stock, I suspect, is being used as collateral. It's been deposited into banks as collateral for loans. If the value of the stock being used as collateral diminishes, some of the loans have to be called in, or people have to put up more collateral or something. These loans are helping to they are often consumer loans where people can go to the bank and you can borrow enough money to buy a new car, new flat screen TV, new house. If collateral is disappearing, there's not going to be as much access to credit as was formerly the case. If you can't get access to credit, maybe you can't get the house, can't get the car, can't even get the flat screen TV. There are consequences in this that the average person should be paying attention to and should be able to follow to some degree and realize, even if you don't have stock, this is not a good sign, certainly for the global economy. Michael, again, Snyder, the author of the article, he says as bad as things are in the U.S. right now, though, there's silver lining. He says the truth, we still have a long ways to go to catch up with the rest of the planet. Around the world, many major stock indexes are already down more than 30 or 40%. Overall, the MSCI All Country World Index is down about 20%, which officially puts us in bear market territory. And what he's going on, he's essentially saying everybody's got trouble, but the U.S. perhaps has less trouble than the other countries in the world, which is, you know, cause for a certain amount of, well, yay, yay, a little bit like me. We're on the stern of the Titanic, and those other morons are on the bow, and they'll go down first. Well, yeah, they will, but the stern is going to follow the bow. It won't be fun for anyone. Nevertheless, money's disappearing, and we've had now 3 weeks, over 3 weeks. We're starting the fourth week in January in the markets. We've had some dramatic declines, especially in the first week, not so much the second week. Third week was flatter again. Now we're back again, another 200 points or more being lost by the Dow. The evidence suggests that this is not just a temporary little glitch. Markets go up and markets go down. But sometimes a new trend starts where the markets are going down and they're going to keep going down for a while, or they're going up and they're going to keep going up. We've got a bear market, we've got a bull market. Right now the evidence suggests we really are in a persistent downturn in the markets and perhaps in a persistent upturn for the precious metals. We'll watch and see, but that's the way it looks right now. This isn't just a blip. We've had 3 weeks of this now, going into four. It hasn't been the kind of collapse where, oh my gosh, run for the hills, but it's still, we're down, 1,500 points in the first 3 weeks on the Dow? This is persistent. At the moment, this is persistent. And that's what you have to pay attention to and say, oh my gosh, the trend is your friend when it's going up. Is it your friend when it's going down? Well, it can be. But I mean, it's still cause for concern.
I just pulled up the numbers from the U.S. Mint as far as Silver Eagles are concerned. So far this month, there were 5.7 million coins that were sold. Now, I shouldn't say this month, but for 2016's, you have to remember that they stopped making the 2015's, both the silver and the gold eagles. I think the gold was in the end of November December for the silver. So you get a little bit of a distortion for January of each year because everybody's holding off, and plus there's that big delay before they're released and so forth. So it can be distorted somewhat, but still 5.7 2016 silver eagles, 5.7 million silver eagles have been sold so far. Absolutely it'll be the first time. I'm sure it'll go over 6 million for a month. So that is still heavy buying for silver for a month. It will be a record. Should we sell, I'm sure we'll sell 300,000 this week. For gold, you're looking about 112 ounces for the month so far.
112,000
ounces so far. You have a lot of the fractional pieces did quite well this month. There was because they stopped making the quarter ounce and the 1/10 ounce back in November for the 2015, so they could begin on the 2016s. And by law, they can't release the 2016s until January. So they were strong for the month, but there was 80,000 1 ounce, and the rest was in the fractional pieces. Wasn't a record for gold for the month, but still a pretty good showing for both gold and silver. So
we've got about a 6,000 to one ratio between the number of ounces of silver being sold to the number of ounces of gold being sold. I think you said we had 6 million ounces of silver.
Well, we should do 6 million this month. It's not there
actually,
yet. 5.7. 5.7.
Yeah, 60 to 1. Is that just Is that just, does that simply reflect the difference in the price of the two metals, or is there anything to be gained from 60-to-1 ratio of sales?
You know,
is it just average, or is they're buying both of them basically at more or less the same rate?
You know, I don't buy my silver based on ratios. I don't buy my gold based on ratios. And it's a nice number to follow. And some people put a lot of, faith into it. I have a lot of people that buy it based on the ratio of silver to gold. But I'm an old fundamentalist. I look at the fundamentals. And I believe you buy gold to preserve your purchasing power. And silver you buy for the additional percentage of gains, but it's a little more volatile. And when you have any type of something in a percentage gain that will perform strongly. We see that in the $20 gold pieces. You know, any time that you can get those types of gains, you're going to have a little more volatility. Does it make it a bad investment? Absolutely not. It's great. So, but that's where I stand on the ratios. I think silver is very important. There's a lot going on in that market, and I think you're going to see the miners. Even I'm not a paper person. I don't own any shares, mining shares. People have been decimated in that market, but at least they're beginning to be rebound from the depths of whatever you want to call it. But pardon?
Depths of disaster. A lot of people.
It's probably a little bit lower. Probably a little bit lower than that. But so, folks, if you begin to get some gains on your miners, or you're beginning to recapture some of your losses, get out of there and get it into physical gold. And remember, when you own paper, you don't own gold. It's paper you own. And I can't tell you how many times people have come to me and said, you know what, Melody, I did want to buy physical gold, but I got talked into buying paper, and I should have listened to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to diversify into paper, just make sure it's backed up and you know exactly what you have and you know how it will perform. That's the problem. In paper markets, they promise you the world. You're going to have all these gains. You're going to have all these, you're going to make millions and millions of dollars. How many millions of dollars have been made on the Iraqi dinar yet? And again, you have to know how the investment will work during certain periods. And periods have changed. Everybody compares the depression with a lot of things. The miners, I can't tell you how many times I hear about how well the miners have done during the depression. Well, you know what? They did okay, but they didn't really perform by those hundreds of percentages until they actually confiscated gold in 1933. Then they took off. But, they talk about, they took off when the market collapsed. No, they didn't. They didn't take off until 1933. Go back and look at a chart. They didn't do bad. They did better than other paper investments, but they didn't do that big gain until 1933. So, be careful. And if you have questions, always give me a call, and you'll get the truth here, and you'll get my honest opinion.
Well, it's time for us to take a break, and Melody and I will be back, and we'll be joined by Joe from Arkansas, Joe Alexander, in his book, The Way Book right here. And I have to scroll up here and make sure I get the name of his book correctly. Oh, we'll get it when we start the program.
The Way Forward is Back.
The Way Forward is Back, yes. All right, we'll be back with Joe Alexander in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And our guest is Joe Alexander, who calls in periodically on the program from Arkansas. He's written a book entitled The Way Forward is Back. We've got a number of unusual contentions. He is not necessarily an advocate of evolution, but he thinks that we may be, instead of getting better, maybe we're getting worse as a species. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. We've had some beautiful weather here in Arkansas today. And how are you, Al?
Can't complain.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Melody.
So if I'm understanding correctly, You don't think the world is getting better. You're arguing in part of your book that evolution, the idea the proponents of evolution are saying, you know, everything's getting better. We're becoming a more noble, more intelligent, more objective, more just species than what we were. We're evolving from brutes into something sophisticated and remarkable. And you're saying you're not so sure that's true. You have your doubts. And you think you've got some strategies that can help people to avoid that decline and actually improve their lives. Is that roughly correct?
Yeah, you got it pretty well. Yeah, and you guys seem to say it every day yourselves, you know, on your program. You talk about how the economy is deteriorating from the way it used to be, and you talk about how the country seems to be deteriorating in various ways. There seems to be more and more corruption in politics all the time from what there used to be. You know, the country is in decline and so on like that. You and many other people talk this way. And I think what is the underlying cause of it, you know, it reflects, you know, the political and economic decline reflects the underlying decline of the general human biospiritual condition. I like to talk about it.
All right. What evidence do you have that humanity is degenerating more than it's evolving? Do you have any evidence other than TV?
Well, the main evidence, you know, what the most convincing evidence, you know, that I've experienced, that anyone can experience, is that if you do things to move yourself back towards what would have been our more original or primal condition, you find that your intelligence is increasing, your health is getting much, much better. You find yourself becoming more virtuous of character with more integrity. You find yourself understanding things that you didn't understand before and developing new interests that you didn't have before. In other words, what I've been finding is that if you do things that move you back more towards what our original or beginning or primal condition must have been, then what you experience is that you become better in every way. You find yourself regaining consciousness, regaining intelligence, regaining health, and so on, that we have lost. And in my case, I saw that because I had degenerated so much, I was believing in all kinds of political and economic ideas, which were absolutely ludicrous. You know, I was a very left-wing, socialistic, progressive type before I started working on my regeneration. And as I made progress in my regeneration, I found myself more and more seeing that the more conservative people had a lot to say that was, you know, that made more sense than what the Marxists and the progressives and the left-wingers were saying. And I got more and more attracted to first conservative ideas and then libertarian and constitutionalist ideas. And I saw that our founding fathers, you know, actually had much more realistic and better ideas on how to arrange our political and economic system than the Marxists and the leftists did, which I had believed in when I was in a very degenerated condition. In other words, as I improved my condition, as I increased my health and intelligence, I found myself more able to comprehend and be attracted to the right sort of political ideas which could get us back on track, you know, towards a better country and a better world.
What do you mean by primal condition? You're not talking about we go back and live in caves, carry a club and wear a lion skin or something like that. What do you mean by primal condition?
Okay, well, take physical health as one example. You know, this is the easiest one to comprehend. Okay, I think it's pretty general knowledge now that there are a lot of diseases very prevalent now that used to be quite rare. And, for instance, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, you know, of course, there's new diseases like AIDS and Alzheimer's disease and, you know, autism, things like that that have appeared in recent years that just didn't used to exist. And that generally human health seems to be declining, and it's because we're more and more, you know, they're subject to a toxic environment. We more and more eat food from big food corporations, which is devitalized, you know, doesn't have much nutrition in it, is loaded with toxic chemicals, you know. And if we get back more towards how people used to live and eat, you know, if we eat a more primitive sort of diet, like a lot of people have gone to the paleo diet. Personally, I like the raw food diet. If you go back to what would have been the type of diet that people would have lived on, you know, hundreds and thousands of years ago, you generally find your health increases quite dramatically, especially if you go to the raw food diet. You find that you have much, much, much more energy. You get sick much, much, much less often. You don't have anywhere near the disability in old age that people commonly experience. You know, your intelligence increases, your spiritual awareness increases, your condition improves in every sort of way. If you detoxify your body and go back to a more primitive sort of diet, you find yourself becoming a much better person than you were in every sort of way. And so that's one of the most obvious and easy to understand examples of how if we go back to how we were designed and meant and formerly lived, you know, our condition improves a whole lot. And then there are other things. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well,
what's
kind of pulled us away from this common sense diet?
Uh-huh.
Right? What's moved us away from what nature intended us to be, and nature is most conducive to supporting, what's pulled us away to something that is unnatural and perhaps self-destructive?
Yeah, yeah.
No, what?
It's like,
what has done it? What is the source of that? How did we get from point A to point B? What dragged us there?
Well, it's a combination of two things. It's a combination of one, people tend to be kind of, you know, liking to indulge in things that feel good at the time, taste good at the time, you know, but are not necessarily good for them. You know, people just tend to naturally like to indulge in drugs that make them feel good, alcohol that makes them feel good, tasty junk foods that, you know, taste good, but are not very good for their health. You know, people just
chocolate
naturally
eclairs,
like to indulge themselves
include,
in that way.
Does this list include chocolate eclairs and Ho-Ohs and that sort of thing?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I understand.
Yeah. And so it's the natural tendency of people to like to indulge in things that might feel good at the time, taste good at the time, but they're not really good for us. And the second thing is that I'm convinced that there are evil people that want to increase the degeneration of the human race, that want to accelerate the degeneration of the human condition. And so they deliberately, you know, advertise and, you know, make it attractive to do things that degenerate our health. You know, think of all the people that are selling drugs, you know, that peddle drugs as the panacea for all our mental and physical problems, you know, when they know these drugs are destructive. And think of all the corporations that peddle foods that they know are destructive for our health, but they know they can sell
because, a lot of the blame. Myself, yeah. I'd place a lot of the blame in the corporations because you can't make much money selling raw carrots. You understand? Mm-hmm. What you've got to do is if you can take those carrots, however, slice them up, fry them in some deep fat, and package them with a little sugar and salt on them, you can sell a lot more carrots than you can raw carrots. You know, they're not a big profit item. And you're talking about going back to a primal condition with natural foods. And I'm just looking, that's a great idea, but it's as business models go, you're not going to get much money out of the bank. So, I want to start up a restaurant to sell just primal foods. Well, if you want to be big, you've got to be a corporation. I want to sell something they've never tasted before. It might not be good for them, but it'll drive them crazy. They'll be addicted to it, if you catch
my... I think not necessarily, because, you know, we can see from the way things are going, if things are sold in the right way, packages are sold in the right way, people can make a lot of money selling things that really are good for people. You know, think of all the... You know, of course, alternative radio seems to be mostly supported now by these vitamins and minerals and supplements and superfoods and things like that, you know, which really are good for people, which really do improve your health. And
I get that, but the business model that I'm just saying, it's not the business model that you want to take to the bank, and certainly not over time. It might be today it's becoming trendy to some degree. Common sense is perhaps beginning to prevail, but for the last 50 years or 100 years, there was more money in Snickers bars than there was in carrots. You talk about in your book, you talk about biospiritual regeneration. Your book is not merely about how we can become physically healthier, stronger, have more energy if we change our diet. I mean, that's just one small part of it. You're talking about spiritual regeneration also. Why don't you give us an idea of what you mean by that?
Okay, what I talk about in the book, I call them the three nails to bang. I found that, you know, after trying many, many things, you know, for many years to improve my condition, I found that there were three key issues to work on to return as much as possible, you know, to optimum condition. And what these three nails to bang on are, number one, renewal or restoration or boosting up of the bioelectric or spiritual energy. That's nail number one. Number two is detoxing the body and getting your optimum nourishment from the natural raw foods. And number three is releasing any distress from the past, any trauma from the past, any pain from the past that you might be holding in your body in the form of repressed emotional energy. And the reason I wrote this book is I found that when I listened to all the experts, you know, we hear so many experts talking about how to improve our condition, how to improve our health and so on like that. And I found that generally they were experts in one of these areas. You know, they would be maybe yoga teachers are very good at knowing how to increase your bioelectric or spiritual energy. I think Tai Chi is another thing that people do for that purpose. And then there's many health experts that are great experts at detoxing your body and how to improve your nourishment, you know, with vitamins and supplements and raw foods and so on like that. And then there are a very small number of people. Now, this is the least understood and least dealt with aspect of holistic health and well-being, is the release of distress from the past that's stuck in your body. But I think it's the most important if you want to really gain regain your freedom and be, you know, sort of influential person in the world. Because many, many people have trauma from the past or pain from the past or emotional pain from the past stuck in their bodies. And generally, it's not well understood how to deal with it, how to release it, how to get free of it, you know, how to
it's not even well
how to regain the full joy of life. That's the third nail to bang on, which I think is the most outstanding part of my book, because I think I've come to understand this issue, you know, probably better than pretty much anyone else out there, because I have such a big case of this to deal with, and I tried so many ways of resolving it, so many ways of working on it, and I think because of that, you know, I found what I think is the most effective way of working on this issue, and I've seen my condition improve, you know, a lot over the years as a result of working with the technique that I discovered for working on this.
You say that you believe there's a relationship between biospiritual wellness and political opinions. Right.
Yeah.
Can
yeah,
you explain that?
Yeah, as I said, you know, if you're not in good biospiritual condition, if you're kind of in a deteriorated, degenerated condition, I think you won't really be able to understand or comprehend or be attracted to realistic, sane political ideals. You know, like I say, when I was in a very deteriorated, very degenerated condition, I was a left-wing Marxist socialist. You know, I believe that was the way to go. And I thought that people that were of more of the conservative or libertarian or constitutionalist type persuasion, you know, were just plain evil. You know, there was something nasty and evil and, you know, despicable about them. But as I improved my condition, as I improved my health, as I increased my intelligence, as I freed myself from the trauma from the past that was stuck in my body, you know, I found myself more and more seeing how stupid and misguided and unrealistic, you know, my left-wing socialistic ideas had been, and how much more intelligent were our American founding fathers, and the conservatives were generally much more realistic and mature than the socialists and the left-wingers. And I found that the constitutionalists and libertarians, I say, you know, have the most realistic, best ideas on politics and economics of all. And, of course, when those ideas are put into practice, as they were more in early America, you know, the country thrives and prospers and becomes a wonderful place to live, you know, much more so than when the unrealistic, you know, socialistic and left-wing and, you know, totalitarian ideas are followed. So I think if people are in good condition, if they're in good health and really intelligent, then they will, you know, see what's wrong with the wrong sort of political ideas, and they'll be much more attracted to the right ones, and of course they'll also have more energy and intelligence to work for them.
And how do people get a copy of the book, Joe?
Okay, you can get it from Amazon or Barnes and Noble. It costs $9.95 or $5 for the ebook. And you can, like I say, you can get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or from Outskirts Press. If you go to the website, www.outskirtspress.com/BR, B-E-E-Y-A-R, you can find out more information about it. That's how you get the book.
And we're looking for The Way Forward is Back. That's the title of the book, true?
Mm-hmm. The Way Forward is
Back. The Way Forward
is
Back by Joe Alexander. Joe, we need to thank you for your information. Hope you do well with your book, and we'll look forward to talking to you again when you call in the future.
All right. Thank you very much for this interview.
Sure
thing.
Thank you. We're going to remind folks that we're going to have Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com will be our guest tomorrow, and we hope you'll tune in at that time. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Joe Alexander, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.